And I'm going to do this one now. And we are live.
Jazz hands.
Welcome everybody to episode 186 of Live at the Hive Digital Marketing from the Trenches. I'm Dan Nedelko.
And I'm Stacy DeSantis.
And I'm Ronak Slade.
Welcome, Ronak. And today we are talking about how to create a social media content calendar, a little bit of back to the basics that will help you save your sanity and keep you from pulling your hair out. Right, Stacy?
Yes. I have a lot of hair.
But... there may or may not be an inside joke on some of that, but
yeah.
Yes, so welcome to the episode, everybody, today, and welcome Ronak, one of our newer bees, to his very first ever Live at the Hive. So Ronak, why don't you just take a minute and introduce yourself to our millions of followers?
Yeah, so my name is Ronak, and I joined Honeypot Marketing here as a content marketing specialist. So I work on social media, and that's why I'm here today. It's really exciting. But
awesome.
We'll be talking about how to create the content calendars.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the most important things about creating a content calendar, a few things we'll talk about first, and then we'll dive into what's new, and then we'll jump back to this topic. When you create a content calendar, I think a lot of social media managers and a lot of people in marketing and on social look at it as a set it and forget it type of philosophy, where I'm done my content calendar, yay, I can move on to the next thing. In reality, what we're going to cover is, one, why it's only the tip of the iceberg. It frees you up for so much more. We're going to talk about how to develop your content pillars, how to develop a content matrix from those content pillars that you weave back from your personas so that you're staying relevant and engaging. We're also going to talk about some content blocking tips, some social media tips that you can hopefully action by yourself, regardless of how large or small your content calendar may be or how aggressive it might be.
Yeah, so it's really a living document.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. All right. So why don't we dive into what's new in the world of digital marketing? So this one, good times. The head of Instagram has shared with the world that we are no longer a photo sharing app. I wouldn't say it blew up my Twitter, but it was definitely there where people were in shock and awe.
I know. And okay. You know, like, it's like one of those things, we've seen this coming for a while. They're going to be focusing more on the video experience, about online shopping. They talk in this article about how, you know, the pandemic really helped them, not helped them, but expedited the fact that they were going to move in more into like an e-commerce almost type of platform where they'll make it easier for brands to kind of create a seamless flow from the content itself to actually making the purchase on the app. So
And I mean, this is literally what we've been talking about for probably over a year. And actually part of some of our tips are that moving away from the standard feed into the newer formats that the platforms all want you to push. Specifically, it's no secret that IG has been for a couple of years actually moving into video with IGTV, then with Reels, and then the shopping. So the fact that this is being stated this way seems like a little bit of PR. I'm not entirely.
Yeah, it's almost like, don't forget about us. We're here and this is what we're doing. Because I think TikTok has taken, well, they talk about TikTok and Clubhouse kind of stealing their thunder a bit, that they're kind of becoming the more top of mind, our first choice for a lot of the Gen Zs out there. So,
to be dismissed is YouTube with YouTube Shorts. YouTube has exploded over the last like 12 to 18 months in terms of monetization and new features and what they're doing. So they're acknowledging stiff competition for sure.
Yeah. So almost everybody I heard, though, whether it was on Twitter or even on the radio and they were talking about the story, they all kind of had the same reaction. They were all like, yeah, we know already. but thanks for letting us know again.
Well, I think one of the things that I find funny about this is that I honestly believe that YouTube is the much larger competitor in that video space, exponential scales of times larger than TikTok. It's just for some reason people look at it like it's this traditional thing. Mm-hmm. But if you interact with the platforms and you use the platforms, you'll know that the YouTube Shorts has absolutely exploded creator views and is a brand new feature within YouTube that actually ties to a much stronger video experience, obviously, on YouTube. So,
yeah,
I would still, you know, not to stare into the crystal ball or anything too much on something like this, but Instagram and Facebook are going to hit hard on e-com because I think that's where they see both advertising dollars and new revenue coming in for them. So if you're in marketing and you're thinking about it, it's time to start thinking Facebook, Instagram, shopping as well.
Okay. For sure. Yeah.
Moving right along into the scary, scary, spooky, scary world of Apple iOS 14.5 and iOS 15. What's otherwise known as IDFA. And this is going to be an evolving thing. The funny thing is Google kicked the can down the road for, I think, 2 or 3 more years on the use of third-party cookie data for your advertising campaigns and what you can do with it. I think one interesting thing that I took out of this, and I've been following it relatively closely, at least what the features are, is the simple fact that with IDFA and with iOS changes, yes, they're 47% of the market in the US market, approximately. Internationally, they're less because Android starts to dominate outside because of the multiple brands that use Android, including Google themselves. Mm-hmm. A couple of things from a marketer's perspective, again, not to hammer this because I think I've said it like 3 weeks in a row, focus on your first party data. Focus on building your audiences and focus on new ways to collect and retain and engage your consumers, as opposed to leaning into standard audiences that Facebook can generate without you having to do much work.
Yeah, right? It's definitely switching the story to more of a direct to consumer. It's almost like on full circle, really, when you look at it, right? We were direct to consumer, then we were using all the third-party data to reach like-minded individuals, and now it's kind of coming back to, well, you need to build that first-party data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, definitely
when you really should look at it. The evolution. Yeah.
So a couple of the interesting things about Apple's features that they're bringing out. Number one, you need to have the iCloud subscription at a premium level to use these features. They don't come free, so that's going to cut things down a bit.
Yeah.
Hide my email feature. So what that one is it allows you to generate a randomized email to marketers that will then forward and redirect back into yours. So the people that you register with do not actually have your email address, right? This is going to be a thing. It's a few extra steps for users. So we all know what users do at scale, right? Which is nothing. They won't go through the extra steps if at all possible. So
exactly.
That's one. And the same thing with moving beyond IP addresses, which is effectively a spoofing IP service, making it more difficult for sites to track you across the web. Again, it's a premium feature. So it doesn't apply to all Apple users. That assumes that every Apple user is an iCloud user and that they have a premium upgraded subscription, which is definitely not the case. yes.
Do you think they're using this to kind of incentivize people, though?
I think I think that's definitely the ulterior motive of Apple, is to get you to use more of their services. They've really positioned themselves as this white knight of privacy and security. To a certain degree, that's true, but there are definitely business and ulterior motives just looking at how Apple always operates.
Yeah, Apple's after Apple.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, they're exactly. looking after Apple.
Mm-hmm. They're raising the banner of privacy in order to do that. So clever,
look at us.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's more nuance to it. There's shades of gray in there. I do think that, you know, Google has been for many years and Facebook have for many years kind of especially Google, probably even more so than Facebook, where they've gone to the absolute extreme of data collection. Even if, for example, even if at certain points you had location data turned off, your location data was being tracked. Hey, Radek, do you have headphones? Because I can hear my echo.
Yeah, sure.
And that's going to be you, my friend. That's okay. I'm just going to mute you for a second while you do that. Cool. So one of the quotes there, marketers need to stop relying on crappy old technology that got them fat and lazy. They need to start getting creative and thinking like human beings. I agree with that too. I do think that that's an important part. And Stacey, you kind of alluded to that. Getting further into that engagement and being more savvy about how things work.
Yeah, I just... You're reading that quote and I'm like, whoa, tell us how you really feel, bud. He's not wrong, but you know, yeah,
for sure. Okay. TikTok launches new unplugged info sessions to share insights in how marketers can succeed. Okay. So there's these free range of TikTok unplugged business info session, sharing secret tips on how to grow your brand with TikTok marketing. So some free resources, yeah, that you can tap into.
It's a smart play because that's what they're really leaning on is their creator community, right? So if you can, you know, bring the creators together with the brands and create this unplugged environment where they can just actively learn about your platform and how to, you know, how you can make the most of it, then why not,
right? Yeah, for sure. So lots of good resources there for TikTok if you're thinking of jumping into the TikTok game. I think it's already a little bit over time because we kind of dug into a couple of those other articles. So why don't we jump right in? Boop, 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 boop.
It looks like I have a fern growing out of my head.
You probably do. Like COVID hair... Phase 2 in Ontario is opening up any moment, isn't it?
Yes. Isn't that great? Awesome.
So you'll be able to get your hair cut.
Yeah.
For the first time in however long. Totally. So how to create a social media content calendar the right way. So let's kind of dig into this a little bit here. Like I said before, the social media calendar is just the tip of your iceberg. It's a planning and scheduling and QA and sanity tool that you can use to really save you time, keep your deadlines, keep yourself organized.
Yeah, and just help you target in on what you're exactly trying to say, what those messaging points are. This is where, when we've talked in previous episodes, where personas and customer journeys, this is where we kind of now take all that goodness, all that, you know, good stuff that we've collected and that we've learned, and we put it into action.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we're going to talk about some of the nuances of getting that calendar put together and some roadmaps and some tips for you.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. There he is. Only you can unmute you, Ronak. I cannot.
I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yep, that sounds good. Perfect. I'm pretty sure I'm just hearing echo on my side. Well, whatever. All right. So the first thing you need to do when you're starting to define your social media content calendar and your social media strategy, this is an important kind of philosophy, and it's called the North Star metric. And various businesses use it as a North Star metric for a business, but as a social media manager or social content creator, I think it's very important to understand what your North Star metric really should be when it comes to your social media efforts. Otherwise, you'll get buried in data and all sorts of crazy data.
you can slice and dice it in multiple different ways. And I just think it's funny, as marketers, we always come up with these like sayings like evergreen content, North Star metric, but really it just helps you understand what you zero in on. Like if I had, as a content marketer, if I had to zero in what I think a great North Star metric would be, it'd be how many times people save or share the content I put out there. Because to me, that means that they really loved what we created and they're going to come back and look at it and consume it again. Someone else may have, you know, the number of comments, whatever that KPI is that really is going to make a difference. Like, I think on the slide itself, we had a great one that Spotify measured their North Star on how many minutes or time spent listening mm-hmm. on the app, right? So it depends on the channel and such and what you're trying to achieve, but understanding that North Star is going to really help guide you into what you need to be focusing on, what that, you know, piece is.
Absolutely. I'm just going to jump over here to a different little part here. One of the things I would suggest for the majority of people that are looking at what should my North Star be? So you look at Spotify's total minutes spent listening, right? It's easy to understand. It's easy to consume. It's easy to say, yeah, that's working or it's not working, right? So really the one that we want to look at, is I would suggest putting together a consolidated amalgamated view of engagement KPIs. So your reactions, comments, shares, your average engagement rate and amplification rate. You can combine reactions, comments, and shares. Look at those as effectively one simple number to say, I'm headed in the right direction. And that's what that's what that's intended to do. Because you can get lost in what's up and what's down. But if you've got 47 posts coming out on each channel in a month, as an example, it's easy to say, hey, we had one that went really fantastically and the others didn't. But when you combine them and you get that North Star view, it makes it a whole lot easier from a bird's eye perspective to understand how is this going as an aggregate.
Yeah, and it also helps you not get caught up in vanity metrics. We've had a lot of scenarios in the past where people are like, oh, well, we didn't get the reach we wanted. And I'm always like, I use a party analogy, and I know Ronak's heard me say this before, but I think engagement is much more important than the amount of reach. Like, you could mm-hmm. go to a party and have a million people there, but if only two people talk to you, so what? Mm-hmm. But if you go to a party and 100 people are there and 99 of them speak to you, then that's a win. And that's kind of the analogy I always use.
Yep. 100%. All right. So once we have determined a North Star metric, what we want to do is, and again, we're not going to dive into personas, but hopefully you are looking at your personas. You are learning about your customers on the regular and understanding what drives them and what motivates them beyond your product and beyond your service, but kind of the why of it. At that point, what we're going to want to do is determine what are called content pillars. So Stacey, why don't you dive into a little bit about content pillars?
Yeah, content pillars are pieces that are motivators that your audience has in terms of your content. So we were talking about this during our production meeting this week about how you may have an insurance company that sells car insurance, and how you want to approach that is understand what's going to motivate someone to be interested in that topic. So you have to look at the different triggers of that motivation and then break those into various pillars. So is it informational? Is it humor? Is it, a case study? Is it a contest? Like, understand what those different pillars are. And by understanding what those pillars are, you can then start to do your content blocking, which we're going to get into that with the next slide. But basically, these are the ways that you would attract or trigger someone's interest in what you're talking about. And we're not getting into specs. We're getting into
help you out of the word salad. What you want to do is, again, the famous kind of Simon Sinek is think about the why and not the how. So, I mean, if you were going to use insurance, you could use insurance. Insurance, for example, is not something that people actively consume, but there are micro moments associated when your insurance is important. You've either just got a rate hike, or you've rear-ended somebody, somebody's rear-ended you, you're buying a new car, you don't know if you have long-term disability coverage, maybe you got into a car accident and someone else got injured and are you covered? Those are all the micro moments that trigger. And then everything around that can become very interesting when it's topical and relevant, if that makes sense. And so these are your content pillars. And there's a couple of different examples here. This is just a generic example. So obviously yours is going to be much more specific. But when you look at your content pillars and you understand the fact that these are the overriding themes I'm going to be talking about because these are the things that are relevant to my audience and relevant to the service or product that I've got, that will help keep you on point and consistent with how you're going to message without becoming too overly stale.
Yeah, because you don't want to just be giving like financial tip over financial tip over financial tip. You want to vary that content and make sure that like I always like to look at people's natural breaks through the customer journey too when I'm blocking out these content pillars because it helps you understand when someone's going to ideally be looking at that social channel. So let's say we had a client or someone that had an emergency service that was past the regular 9 to 5. You may want to schedule a post talking about that emergency service on a Sunday at 7 o'clock at night because that's when your furnace breaks down. That's when things happen, right? So understanding those pillars, what those key subject pieces you want to hit are, and then understanding the triggers will then help you get into the next piece we're going to talk about, which is the blocking.
Mm-hmm. Totally. So let's jump into the next bit here, which is then taking one of those pillars and then building what we call a content matrix out of it, which then has types of content with some themes and some examples. And these are just basic examples, but you can see how you can break it down to create interesting, useful content that remains on the platform. And we see this a lot. And one of my pet peeves with all social is, how's your budget doing? Check out our blog to learn more. And that's a post. And it's like, that has not done anything. And the odds of you getting any kind of real engagement rate on that type of content is probably pretty slim.
Yeah. Like what's the value? Like what value are you providing to the user when they're reading that post? If you gave them a little sneak peek or a little tip, maybe one out of the 10 that you're going to share with them, that's going to pique their interest and their curiosity. And likely they'll want to click through.
Mm-hmm. So here's a couple of examples, and I think this is an important tip that I wanted to kind of reinforce about as you're developing your social media content calendar, what you do want to be doing is having relevant information within the body of the post that's valuable to someone. So, you know, I wouldn't say write a blog post, but certainly you can go in depth on certain platforms a little bit deeper than you can on others, or you can create an infographic video that actually has the information directly there. You're not trying to lead someone away, right? So this one, where to go? Yeah. There it is. Oh, so social content will provide immediate value within the post itself. Don't be so driven into the idea that I have got to push somebody over to my blog. I've got to get them over to my website. I got to get them to my landing page, especially when you're at the top level of interest where you're trying to gain that engagement, is put it all right in there. Like give them a reason to share it, right? That's their, like, and that it really is on, especially on Facebook and on TikTok as well. The share is the most powerful engagement metric of all of them because you're pushing that into your feed, right?
Exactly. And we would call this the C stage.
That's right. And the C think, do care framework.
Yes.
That is correct. Okay. So when you've got your content matrix, and you can see here that this little example, as soon as I'm able to pull up, I'm jumping all over the place here today.
That's okay. I got rambled in words. It's Friday.
It's all good. It's all good. So if you look at the type of content and you create, you have your content pillar of financial life and you're looking at your content type and then you look at the examples, you can see here that at least in the first few that we had put together is these are actual post content types that show you how you can then extend that out. And if you use this as a standard operating procedure or a method, you're going to see your time to create your content for your content calendars drastically decrease because you'll have a method, right? And you'll be able to get lots of content fairly quickly that remains on point.
100%. It keeps, because you can go just like you can go in so many different directions when it comes to analyzing your North Star, the same goes for content. You can go all over the place on one particular subject. So by having those pillars and that matrix, it helps you kind of really just simplify and understand, okay, what am I going to hit? What's the value I'm going to provide? And how are we going to walk them through the see, think, do, care?
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Totally. And I think, Raunik, this is something that you've been exposed to fairly heavily for the last little while.
Mm-hmm.
And is this something that was new to you in terms of a process from a social media content creation, or is this something that you were familiar with?
I would say that I was familiar with it, but the way that we do here is different from that I've done before. So we use like different audiences, and then we cater our content towards the audience and get more engagement that way. Also, as we've seen here, that we customize it by channel, which is Twitter has different content than LinkedIn and Facebook, because Facebook has more social, right? People can share it with their friends. But when we talk about LinkedIn, then we are mostly focusing on businesses. So B2B sales and different accounts have different areas where they focus on. So that's what we are trying to do here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's important that thematically you stick to the idea of your pillar, then your content matrix, then write your content. And just like write it up. And you can use, we use a tool called Smartsheet. I know some of the people at Smartsheet, if I said it's a fancy spreadsheet, they would bonk me over the head. It's got a lot more to it than that. But Smartsheet does make it easier to collaborate, and it does have some more intelligence. It's a lot more than the spreadsheet. And what you can do is you can begin writing that content and then customize it by the channel and actually deem whether you really think it's appropriate. So just one example is quite typically, Twitter is much more of an engagement tool, right? I wouldn't suggest that a lot of businesses, and a lot of people do this, and you see their sad feed and it's got like no engagement at all. It doesn't have to have tens of thousands, but nothing is not good, because you're broadcasting to a small audience, which is basically an echo chamber, and you're also wasting your time. So you could say, you know what, I really want more of the interaction. So I'm going to spend 80% of my time on Twitter doing social customer service outreach and engaging in other people's threads that are related to mine using Twitter advanced searches. That lightens up your content schedule, and it allows you to put the content that's most appropriate there. To Raunik's point, for example, if we're looking at spouses and family networks looking to have that share through their network, that being one of the North Star metrics of the share, then you would focus something more on Facebook in order to do that, rather than just taking that same post and posting it on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just do this. I'm just going to jump back here. I'll show you quickly. One other thing that I can show here, and I think this one's important. We've brought this one up dozens and dozens of times on Live at the Hive. Might be a little bit hard to see if you're on a mobile device. Oops. Let me just do that. Okay. This is another important part that I'm just going to throw in here, is that in order to maintain your sanity, always look at the content that you have already created so you can refactor it into your social content. It's a really important thing. You've got emails, you've got presentations, you've got podcasts, maybe you've got webinars, right? You've got to look for that content, repurpose it, and then you can deconstruct that into various themes within your content matrix to then reduce the amount of work that you have on a monthly basis to try to get through that calendar, as it were.
Yeah, you don't need to start from net new every single month. You can take pieces that have performed really well and resize them or repurpose them in a way that makes sense for that channel. Like there's many YouTube videos out there that you will see on TikTok that have just been sliced into 30 seconds or now 3-minute bites and then put on that channel. And it works because you're sharing that same content theme, but you're right-sizing it for that particular channel.
Mm-hmm.
And And now you don't have to create a video series because it's there. You just have to do a few 3-minute cuts and boom.
Yeah, for sure. Just to talk about that, so once you've got your content written, you can also look at various types of media, rich media design, and everything else. Canva is a great tool. It does a ton of things. There's a ton of others that are very similar to Canva as well. But just a couple of things is, you know, please try to avoid, if at all possible, stock photography. If you can help it, get original photography. Smartphones have incredible capabilities these days to create great copy. And using a tool like Canva, you can then add your own personal flair to it. And also don't be too heavily overly branded. I think you can loosen up those strings a little bit and let your hair down and have a bit of an organic approach to things.
Yeah, and I think too, it's very important to understand that you should have brand guidelines, because even though you want it to be organic, and I agree with you 100%, Dan, you don't really want to have things overly branded, because 9 times out of 10, that's actually going to turn your users off. But mm-hmm. at the same time, you don't want to go cowboy on Canva and then have your logo be like all wonky donky, right? Like, you want to make sure that it looks consistent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that you look legit. You want to make sure that it's not, it doesn't look like I did my daughter's homework last night type of thing, right? So
there's a fine line for sure. There's always a fine line there. Okay, so we've gotten through content pillars, we've gone through content matrices, developing example content, keeping the content focused and valuable within the post itself. So you're not just trying to say, read my blog post, give them something there. And if you want to refer back to that blog post or larger piece, you know, you can dive into the other 9 ways to do XYZ, right? So now you've got your content, and then you start to pick and choose where you think the best content should go. One other tip is, don't just take one piece of content and auto-publish that exact same content to all the channels. Try to mix it up and keep your themes moving around.
And also, you're on social, so be social. Like, maybe mm-hmm. there's an influencer, there's someone that has written a blog that would very much complement your brand. You can, you know, share that content, tag them in it, and they'll most likely then share it back with their audience. And mm-hmm. that's social media, right? That's the modern day word of mouth. Yeah. So have fun with that.
And keep in mind that one of the key points to this is the fact that the calendar frees you up to do that with your evergreen content, right? So you're not struggling to think about what you're going to post on Friday, or you're only 3 days ahead, or you had a hot streak for a week and then you shut off for a week, right?
Yes.
This is the way to alleviate that, so you have some more time to actually go and engage in other people's contents and build those relationships. That's where you see the most effective use of social, right? Mm-hmm. Is when you are in fact being social.
Exactly.
Cool. This one goes without saying, although there's an important point to this, is don't QA your own work. Just like with any writing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult thing to do. To edit and QA your own work is, you know, you're too close to the project. You'll miss things, especially if you've done a longer session, even like an hour of content creation. It's easy to miss things and convince yourself that you know, what you just created is Leonardo da Vinci of social media content.
And as writers, we often won't see mistakes if we've looked at something for too long. So that's why it's always important to have 2-3 pairs of eyes on a piece of content, because they may see something that you've completely missed and you've been staring at for the last 5 minutes thinking it was, like you said, a Mona Lisa.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then Ronux, like Stacey, put a mustache on her. And I'm
okay, so then next up, as we start to wrap it out, this goes without saying, you need a scheduling platform. There's lots. If you want to burn your money, go ahead and use Hootsuite. That's fine and up to you. But there are tons and tons of alternatives today. There's too many to go through. Posto plan is great if you're on a limited mm-hmm. budget. They've got a lifetime plan. Later is fantastic as well. You could use Sprout Social. You could use Hootsuite. I just took a dig at them. because we were used to be enterprise clients of theirs, but doesn't matter anyways. and try to get ahead, create libraries as well. Like when you see content out there that may apply for your content pillars and within your content matrix, then what you can do is you can create a backlog of content and ideas that you can turn to help reduce that. And not make it a mad rush every month to try to get it finished. That's a real key there.
Yes. I love this idea because it really helps my team here at the Hive. You know, while we're going through our community management efforts, if we see something, we'll save it and we'll make a note of it into a content backlog. So that way, when it comes to the next month, we can easily, oh yeah, remember that. We love that. And we can put it in. So It saves time for sure.
Yeah. And if you've got a history to your social content calendar, and another important thing is try to focus on evergreen content that is valuable, right? You can pull back from your library and reduce the amount you need to do maybe by 10%, you know, every single month on that side of your content calendar creation. Again, that's there to offset and free you up so that during the month you can actually do the important thing, which is the engagement side of stuff.
Yeah, just think like one video you can, if let's say you did a webinar, you can pull quotes out of that. You can do little small video clips. You can maybe have a really cool graphic and give a tip or trick. Like there's so much you can pull out of one piece of content. It's unbelievable. You just have to look at it from different lens and then you can go to town.
Cool. Awesome. So, go ahead, Ronak.
No, I was just adding to that, like a different perspective is always good because even when we do QA, we need like new set of eyes, right? Because if you do the same thing, then you have the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
But the team helps here. So that's absolutely what we're talking about.
Yep, 100%. Great advice. Okay, so rapid fire tips for social. And this one's really important. We're not going to dive into it now, but we may dive into it in another one. Social media is not a free platform anymore. And TikTok will not be a free platform forever. They're just doing what every new social media network, a relatively new social network does, which is gives you that little bit of the drug, gets you hooked, so then you become an addict. And then as soon as they flip the switch and paid becomes stronger than organic, TBD, when that'll happen with TikTok. But with Facebook, with Instagram, getting organic reach, unless you have a massive following, is very, very difficult. So as a business and as a marketer, what you need to do is combine a boosting strategy with your organic in order to ensure you reach the audiences that you want. That's tip number one. Okay. This is a good one for solo marketers and entrepreneurs that maybe don't have a huge team to work with. Consistency is greater than volume. Quality is greater than volume. And value is greater than volume, right?
100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't kill yourself in trying to be CNN or, you know, tweeting 17 times a day unless it comes very naturally to you. But be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. We want to craft our social content and our presence to appeal to micro moments. We've talked about those, but it's ensuring that you are there under known, that your brand is aware of your audience is aware of your brand and that they will turn to you in those micro moments that come up unexpectedly and are typically consumed on a mobile device.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Focus on engagement. Don't worry about follower counts. The follower count is the number one vanity metric that really doesn't mean a whole lot,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you're an accountant and you've got a Facebook business page, unless you're providing real valuable financial advice on a very regular basis, you can pretty much rest assured that you're not going to get a whole ton of followers if you're just a service provider, right? But you want to be able to push your reach. And we'll talk about that both in future episodes and how you can do that from a business standpoint as opposed to an influencer standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think I just said that already, but embrace the fact that social platforms are no longer free.
Yep.
Okay, here we go. Incite conversation using interesting topical facts. Avoid neutral, shallow, meaningless messaging. Check out our blog.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to do that now.
Exactly. This one is important for larger teams. Do not, and we see this a lot, where paid and organic teams, so a content team and a promotional team, operate in a silo. They never talk. There's ads running on social, but it's not aligned with the organic content, and there's no boosting strategy. So you got to get those teams together and communicating. This is typically for larger teams. And for smaller teams, it's you should be working hand in glove together, because you're going to get a much higher return on investment. Both. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I like to say about this is if you see very stale social media platforms that are getting like no engagement and no reactions, somebody's investing money into an individual sitting there being paid to create that content. So that's an ROI point too, not just the fact that, you know, you're not getting anything out of those efforts. Okay. This one, probably a bit much to chew on, but utilizing a multi-step funnel strategy to build first-party data and build your audiences on social and your custom audiences. Mm-hmm. Custom audiences, 1, 2, 3. Keep that in mind. Facebook is basically built on this notion of custom audiences and events that happen both on web, in an app, but on Facebook itself, and you can build lots of custom audiences with lots of intelligence to be able to send a different message to people that are consistently engaged with you or have very recently been engaged with you or maybe used to be engaged with you, right? Those are things that you can do. Okay, we already said that one. This last one I think we touched on, but this will be the last one, which is leverage the newer, more engaging social formats. So Reels, filters on Snapchat, IGTV, right? Whenever these new features come out, the platforms want you to use those and you will get preferential treatment as well.
Yep. Yeah, the reach on Reels right now is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Organically.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. All right. And that takes us to the end of episode 186 of Live at the Hive.
How did we do that, Dan? We're only like, we're good timing. We're getting better.
505. That's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty good for us.
I try to skip through things if I feel like we're getting close to the end of the line. You know what I mean? Try and stay on topic. But we should have some nice clippable content for that. That, so we can set up some shorts on YouTube and do all that stuff. So, all right, everyone. Well, thanks a lot for joining. Hopefully that was helpful in getting you sorted out with your monthly social media content calendar. We will see you next week on Live at the Hive, Digital Marketing from the Trenches. Same B time, same B channel. Have a great weekend.
Take care. Bye, everyone.